Good morning. I'd like to extend an invitation for you to attend our VBS beginning on June the 22nd through the 26th. The theme is Fishing with the Master. We have classes from 4 years old to sixth grade. We will also have an adult class, so feel free to bring your children and stay for our Bible study. If you have any questions, please contact us at 330-682-3896. Our focus beginning today will be on sermons recorded in the book of Acts. Acts records first century sermons intended to convert people to the resurrected Jesus. Acts provides a variety of unique information. In this information are the early church's emphasis when the gospel was presented to potential converts. As worthwhile sermons should, the sermons in Acts addresses the specific needs of the listeners. Those sermons do two things today's man should find important. First, the content of each sermon provides significant insights into the audience. Secondly, the content of each sermon provides significant insights into the speaker's understandings and priorities. Both make the sermons a source of unique information. Although time does not allow a reading of the entire sermon, I encourage you to read the sermon in which we will study today. It's found in Acts chapter 2, verses 14 through 40. First of all, the location of the sermon. The sermon was delivered in Jerusalem on Pentecost. Jerusalem overflowed with Jewish and proselyte pilgrims on Pentecost. In Israel's past, Pentecost was the Feast of Weeks. Originally, it was the national assembly to present the harvest first yield to God. Two original purposes were served by this assembling of Israel's men. The first acknowledged God was the source of their harvest. The second rejoiced in God's harvest blessings. In Israel's past, the Feast of Weeks was one of three annual pilgrimages Israelite men made to a national assembly. Deuteronomy 16, verse 16. When these national days of assembly began, Israel was a small nation occupying a small territory. Only a small nation in a small territory could require all men to make a pilgrimage to a central location three times a year. In the first century, Israelites were scattered throughout their known world. Many Jews could not afford to travel to Jerusalem even once a year. Many who lived long distances from Jerusalem made a pilgrimage to Jerusalem once in a lifetime. The situation is that while Jerusalem was overcrowded with pilgrims, Acts 2 verse 5 focused on Jews living in Jerusalem from every nation. Seemingly, the initial audience was the residents of Jerusalem. Some Jews throughout the Mediterranean world retired in Jerusalem. It is true that Jewish people from all over their known world were present in Jerusalem on Pentecost. Pentecost was 50 days after the first Sabbath following the Passover. However, this seemed to be the immediate objective. Produce converts in Jerusalem who would form a Christian nucleus in that city. Preaching the gospel for the first time in Jerusalem on Pentecost had enormous evangelistic potential for the Jewish world. However, the first objective seemed to be to produce a base of Christian faith in Jerusalem. Luke used comparisons to describe the pre-sermon events. A noise or sound like a windstorm filled an unidentified house where the apostles were. Something that looked like, or seemed to be, flames settled on those in the room. In a close reading of Acts chapter 2 and verse 2 and 3, you will see that it was the sound of a windstorm, not a windstorm. It looked like flames of fire settling on those receiving the Spirit, but it was not flames of fire. What happened was so unique that it had to be compared with something known to man. At some point, the apostles moved from that house to the temple courtyard, the only known place in first century Jerusalem that could accommodate a gathering of thousands. A mysterious phenomenon heard throughout Jerusalem could easily result in a gathering in the temple area. Chapter 2, verse 6 of Acts. Luke did not discuss the transition from the house to the temple courtyard. Each apostle was speaking in the language or dialect of the assembly of Jews. The crowd was amazed because those speaking were Galileans. Galileans were regarded as uneducated. Though this happened in the temple area of Jerusalem, the speakers were not priests, rabbis, scribes, Pharisees, or Sadducees, but they were Galileans. Though the hearers understood the words in their own language, they were confused. The hearers included both Jews and proselytes, verse 10. The hearers heard the speakers declaring God's mighty works, verse 11. However, the hearers could not comprehend the happenings. Read verse 12 and 13. Some suggested drunkenness as an explanation. The speaker, though many speakers shared at first, Peter became the speaker. Peter's entire lesson is not recorded. He said much more than is recorded, verse 40. Peter took charge. He used a loud voice to become the spokesman for the 11, verse 14. Now Peter's approach to his sermon. His audience was eager to understand the confusing events they witnessed. Remember, he spoke to a Jewish audience. Remember, the hearers were familiar with Jewish prophecies and messianic expectations. Peter's evidence and approach made use of their knowledge, background, and expectations and argument. Peter took advantage of every factor to direct the thinking of the listeners. He gave a reason for rejecting the explanation of drunkenness. With Joel's prophecy, he replaced the drunkenness explanation with a divine explanation. He used their confusion to point them to God's work in Jesus. He used their personal knowledge of Jesus' deeds. He declared Jesus' death was in keeping with God's plan. He documented Jesus' resurrection and lordship with Jewish prophecy. Peter's approach used every available factor to move Jewish listeners toward faith in Jesus as the Christ. The sermon. First, note Peter's use of their arguments. Number one, some suggested the events could be explained by drunkenness. Peter said that explanation was unbelievable. It was harvest time. New wine did not contain enough alcohol to allow a person to be drunk by 9 a.m. Number two, note his anticipation of an argument. In chapter 2 and verse 23, he anticipated this argument from his Jewish listeners. It would be impossible to kill God's son. People cannot stop God. Killing God's son would not stop God. In expectation, the Messiah could not be stopped. He would accomplish God's purpose, and God's purpose would be this world's purposes. Peter declared Jesus' death accomplished God's predetermined plan. Secondly, note Peter's use of the Jewish prophecy. Number one, Joel's prophecy in Joel chapter 2, verse 29 through 32 predicted the Spirit's coming, and they were witnesses of the fulfillment of this prophecy. Number two, David prophesied about a person who would not decay, Psalm 16, 8 through 11. David was not talking about himself because he died and decayed, and his grave was right there with him. Number three, David prophesied about a king he could call Lord, Psalm 110, verse 1. David knew someone greater than he would come. Peter used a common authority respected by the listeners, the Jewish prophets. While Peter and the listeners accepted the prophecies with respect and trust, Peter's understanding of those prophecies radically differed from theirs. Realize that Peter grasped the meaning of those prophecies on that day. The coming of the Spirit enabled him to understand God's meanings and intent. He revealed to his listeners what he just understood. The 3,000 who responded were likely a minority. People do not understand new truths quickly. Only open-minded believers respond quickly. They grasp and understand quickly. Third, note Peter's collective use of evidence. Number one, the prophet Joel prophesied the coming of the Spirit. In Jewish expectation, the coming of the Spirit was associated with the Messiah's coming. Number two, they personally knew Jesus' deeds. They were witnesses. Number three, God knew that Jesus would be killed. Number four, David prophesied of the resurrection. And number five, the great King David recognized a Lord superior to himself. Peter did not expect the listeners to take his word for what he said. He used evidences. Note the evidences he used were recognized by the listeners as evidence. Evidences valid only to Peter would have no significance to the listeners. Fourth, note the conclusion. All Israel should know that God made the crucified Jesus Lord and Christ, or the Messiah. Chapter 2, verse 36. The conclusion reached by the sermon, the resurrected Jesus, who is God's Christ, is Lord. The question, what shall we do, is a response of those who accepted this conclusion as correct. Now listen to this very carefully. The conclusion and the response were separate realities. Perhaps some understanding of words is needed. To be the Lord is to be king or ruler. Typically, death ends one's reign as king or ruler. With Jesus, death inaugurated his lordship and began his rule. He currently rules as Lord and will rule as Lord until death is destroyed. 1 Corinthians 15, 25-28. Jesus is his earthly name. The words Christ in the Greek and Messiah in the Hebrew indicate the same divine reality. God's resurrection made Jesus Lord and Christ. He came to this earth to become the Christ, Matthew 16, 13 through 20, but he actually occupied the position as the Christ after his death and resurrection. The reaction now, those who believed Peter's conclusion asked what they should do. These people were terrified. They were guilty of encouraging the execution of God's Son. Jewish justice would demand their death. What they did could not be corrected. Peter introduced them to Jesus' forgiveness. As often occurs in Acts, repentance was stressed. the combination of faith, evidence in their question and response, repentance, and baptism would result in being forgiven and receiving the Spirit, Acts 5:32. The promise of forgiveness and the Spirit was given to them and to many others. The hearers, and Peter likely thought those afar off, referred to Jews throughout their known world. As Peter learned later in Acts chapter 10, those afar off included all people. The combination of faith in Jesus as Lord and Christ, repentance of sin, a redirection of life from evil with a resolve to do God's will, and baptism would produce forgiveness. Even though they had encouraged the execution of God's Son, they could be forgiven and receive the Spirit. Not only was forgiveness and possession of the Spirit possible for them, but it was possible for others, even those afar off. God's plan was for Jesus to become the Christ through death and resurrection. Jesus is Lord and Christ. God did exactly what he intended to do. The sermon is centered on Jesus. The foundation of first century conversion among the Jewish people was this: faith in Jesus as Lord and Christ. Friends, if you have any questions, would you please let us know? And until next week, may God bless and keep you.